No one in all of history has provoked more controversy and debate than Jesus Christ. Some claim that he was a good teacher, others that he was a myth, and still others that he was a madman. So who is Jesus? Contemporary scholars provide a wide range of answers, but few of them satisfy the evidence. And as Christmas approaches, marketing experts around the world use sentimental images of a harmless baby Jesus to sell their products. With all of these contrasting voices, it's easy to lose sight of the biblical Jesus, the Jesus who rose from the dead and then ascended into heaven where he reigns to this day. We'd like for you to have a free resource from Dr. R.C. Sproul titled, Who is Jesus? His 100-page booklet presents compelling biblical and historical evidence that Jesus is God in the flesh. Ask for the booklet, Who is Jesus? When you call 1-800-435-4343. Today on Renewing Your Mind, Dr. R.C. Sproul teaches on one of the most foundational doctrines of the Christian faith.
What is the basis of our justification? Is the basis of our justification the resting in the righteousness of Christ that is imputed to us, or is it based upon a righteousness that is inherent within us?
You're listening to the weekend edition of Renewing Your Mind with Dr. R.C. Sproul. Today we continue our study of justification by faith alone. Last weekend, Dr. Sproul taught on the great exchange that took place when Christ bore our sins and we received his righteousness. In this next lesson, we'll discover how this transfer takes place and how God actually accomplishes his plan of salvation. Today's lesson is titled, The Means of Salvation. Now here's the founder and chairman of Ligonier Ministries, R.C. Sproul.
As we continue now with our study of the doctrine of justification, today I want to turn our attention to a little bit more of the formula that justification is by faith alone. And we say justification by faith. And now I want to turn our attention to this little word, by, and see what this means in the formula, justification by faith alone. We've seen already that the New Testament view of our justification is based upon the righteousness of Christ that is transferred or reckoned or imputed to us. And the way the Scripture speaks of that is that it is transferred or reckoned to us by faith. Now, first of all, let's explain what this does not mean. This does not mean that faith itself is such a good deed and so meritorious that it makes up for all of our demerits and all of our sins. We all have to be very careful not to turn faith into a thinly veiled work and understand justification by faith to mean that we are justified in the sight of God because since we have faith, we are really righteous folks because we've really done the big work, the work of believing. That is not what is meant in the New Testament by faith, nor was it meant by the Reformers when they insisted that justification is by faith. Well, what did they mean? Well, again, let's come back to this little word, by. Little two-letter word, B-Y. Sometimes that Greek word that is used here can be translated through as well as by. In the Greek, the word by appears in the form of the dative. And the dative case is the case that is used in the language to describe, in one instance at least, the means by which something is accomplished. And so the way by faith functions in the New Testament is through what we call the dative of means, or the dative of means is often sometimes called the instrumental dative. Now, that may seem harmless enough, but this little word instrument or instrumental was very much a part of the controversy in the 16th century with respect to justification. And now to understand that little bit of a controversy, we have to do some background, a little background check here into some ancient Greek philosophy. The ancient philosopher Aristotle, who had a tremendous influence on all of Western philosophy since his day, and certainly was highly respected in traditional Christian circles, Aristotle, in thinking about the way things happen, of how things are caused, he tried to analyze this whole process of causality in a very close, careful kind of scrutiny. You know, sometimes we're less than precise, particularly when our children say to us, well, why did such and such happen? And we don't want to be bothered with a detailed, close explanation. We simply say, what? Because. I say, well, because, without ever giving any more content to it. Because, the word because has to do with causality, doesn't it? That's how we use that word, because. Well, Aristotle said there's all different contributing factors that bring about certain events or certain effects. And he distinguished among several types of causes. Now, to understand Aristotle in simple terms, we're going to use an illustration that he himself used, and that was an illustration of a sculptor who, as an artist, fashions a magnificent piece of sculpture, a magnificent statue, out of a raw piece of rock. You get the picture. You see the artist who comes, and he's faced with this bare piece of rock, and after his work is finished, he has transformed this piece of rock into a magnificent statue. Now, what causes that? Well, Aristotle said, well, we can name different causes. First of all, there's the material cause. The material cause being that out of which the stuff is produced. It's the material stuff without which you can't have the statue. If no stone, no statue. And so if you're going to have the result or the effect of a statue, one of the causes for that statue that finally emerges is the block of stone with which the artist starts. But obviously, the stone doesn't make itself into a statue. Something else has to be there besides the stone. You have to have an efficient cause, something that brings about the effect. And the efficient cause in this case would be the sculptor himself, who's the one who does the work. He's the one who transforms that bare block of stone into the magnificent statue. So he could be called the efficient cause. He also speaks about the formal cause being the blueprint or the idea. The artist starts off either with an idea in his mind, or he might even make a sketch on a piece of paper, and that sketch is in front of him. It's his plan, and it guides his thinking and his work as he progresses in changing this unshaped block of stone into the statue. That would be called the formal cause. The final cause, Aristotle defined as the purpose for which the statue was made. Maybe in this case, the sculptor had been commissioned to produce a statue for the king's garden. And so that's why he does it. And there are other such causes, the sufficient cause and so on. But in that list of different causes, Aristotle mentioned the instrumental cause, or the means by which the sculptor produces this lovely work of art. And in this case, the instrument that he uses is what? The chisel. For the painter, it would be the paintbrush. Okay? For the carpenter, it would be his hammer and saw. Those are the tools or the instruments by which this change is wrought and this effect is produced. And so Aristotle defined what he called the instrumental cause of things, which again is the means by which a change is affected. Now, as I said, the question of the instrumental cause of justification was a hotly contested issue in the 16th century, because the Protestant reformers and the Roman Catholic theologians did not agree and still do not agree as to what is the instrumental cause of our justification. Roman Catholic Church declared and made definitive at the Council of Trent in the 16th century that the instrumental cause of justification is the sacrament of baptism in the first instance. Primarily baptism, but it's not the only instrumental cause. There is possibly or potentially a second instrumental cause, which is the sacrament of penance. Well, what does that mean? Well, here's how the Roman Catholic Church defined that. They said that in baptism, justifying grace, the grace of the righteousness of Christ, is infused into the soul. So that the infant, for example, who is baptized, now has the grace of Christ poured into its soul. And now that infant has been cleansed of original sin and is in a state of justifying grace because of something that is now in him, something that inhabits him, or as the church calls it, a habitus. Now, this inhabiting grace that is infused can be augmented or diminished. It can increase or it can decrease. In fact, it can be lost altogether. Now, the person who has thus been baptized is in a state of grace. He possesses the grace of justification and is in good shape unless or until that person commits what's called mortal sin. Some of you who are Roman Catholics or who have friends who are Roman Catholics are familiar with that language of mortal sin, because the church historically distinguishes between two kinds of sin: mortal sin and venial sin. Mortal sin and venial sin. Venial is V-E-N-I-A-L. Now, venial sin is sin. It really is sin. But it's less serious sin than mortal sin. Mortal sin is sin that is so egregious, so heinous, so destructive, so wicked, that it is called mortal because it kills something. It's fatal. And that which it kills is this infused grace of justification. Mortal sin kills the grace that has been infused into the soul. That's why if a person commits mortal sin, they lose their justification and they have to be justified again. The Roman Catholic Church, again at the Council of Trent, defines the sacrament of penance as, quote, the second plank of justification for those who have made shipwreck of their souls. You get the idea, the metaphor now of somebody who's sailing along fine, and then they have a shipwreck, and the ship disintegrates, and they're cast into the sea, and they need a board or something that will rescue them and restore them to safety. And the restorative sacrament is the sacrament of penance. It is the second plank of justification for those who make shipwreck of their souls. And so then the person comes to the church and receives the sacrament of penance and gets a new infusion of the justifying grace of Christ and the righteousness of Christ, which then keeps them in good stead until or unless they again commit mortal sin. But again, they can be restored by continually coming back to the confessional and going through the sacrament of penance. Now, just quickly, you might ask the question, why don't people who have committed mortal sin have to be baptized again? Well, even though mortal sin kills the grace of justification, it does not completely undo baptism. The baptism is only for one time, and the reason being is that in baptism, not only is original sin cleansed, but the soul of the person who receives the sacrament of baptism is given what Rome calls the character indelibus, which being translated simply means an indelible mark. They have been marked indelibly in their soul as one who has received this particular sacrament. Now, they can lose the grace of justification, and they can lose faith. They can lose their faith. And if they lose their faith, they lose their justification. But one of the most important points to realize is they can keep their faith and have true faith and still lose their justification if they commit mortal sin. So that a person who still possesses true faith can be outside of the state of grace, not in the state of justification, and needs to be restored to that state through the sacrament of penance. Now, these sacraments are called instrumental causes of justification because they are the vehicle through which, or the means by which, justifying grace is given to the individual. The means by which justifying grace is communicated to or given to the individual. Now, when this grace is given, this grace is infused. The infusion of this grace, the infusion of the righteousness of Christ, must meet with a particular response from the person who receives it. That person must cooperate with this infused grace and assent to this infused grace in order to produce real righteousness. The words there in the Latin are cooperare and assentare. So do you see here that there is a significant difference on the way in which the grace of God is communicated to the believer? For the Reformed view, the righteousness of Christ is imputed by faith to the believer. For the Roman Catholic, the righteousness of Christ is infused into the person by the sacrament. And the person must then cooperate with this infusion of grace in order to become truly righteous, and must cooperate to the extent that righteousness then inheres or is inherent within the person. So the great controversy in the 16th century was this, and again, what is the basis of our justification? Is the basis of our justification the resting in the righteousness of Christ that is imputed to us, or is it based upon a righteousness that is inherent within us? All the difference in the world. Now, keep in mind, the Roman Catholic Church is not saying here that a person can become righteous without Christ or without grace. They're not saying that, and we'll explain that further later on. But just now, in passing, they are not denying the sinner's dependence upon Jesus Christ and upon the grace of Jesus Christ for that person to be justified. Christ is necessary for justification. But in this sense, what Christ does is makes it possible for us to be justified if we so cooperate with his grace and assent to his grace that we actually become inherently righteous. And only when that righteousness is inherent within us will God declare a person just. Again, for God to declare a person just, that person must be just. And it may take 60,000 years in purgatory to become in that state that is enough to satisfy the demands of God's law so that a person can ultimately be justified. Whereas in the Protestant view, and what I believe is the biblical view, the moment that we receive the righteousness of Christ by faith, God then at that time, as he did with Abraham, declares us just. Now we see then that this dispute about the means or the instrumental cause focused on the phrase justification by faith alone. What Luther was saying, what Calvin was saying, is when the New Testament speaks of being justified by faith, that the instrumental cause of our justification, the tool or the means by which we are given justification, is not through the sacraments, as important as the sacraments may be, but that we are justified by faith. And by faith alone. Faith is the alone instrumental cause of justification. So that when I have faith, that faith links me. It is the instrument by which I am linked to the righteousness of Christ. It's the conduit by which his righteousness is given to me in God's eyes by his divine imputation. So that the minute I have the instrumental cause, I receive through the instrumental cause the meritorious cause of my justification, which is the righteousness of Christ. Now, I hope we can understand that difference. Because again, in the final analysis, is the means by which the work of Christ is appropriated to me, something that is channeled strictly through the operation of the sacraments of the church. This is why Roman Catholic theology is called sacerdotalism, because the redemption of Christ is communicated through the sacraments of the church, ex opera operato, through the very working of the works. Or is it something that requires faith, and faith alone, and faith is sufficient to bring about the effect of one's justification? Now, don't let me end this today leaving you with a misapprehension. This is not to suggest that the Roman Catholic Church thinks that faith is insignificant or unimportant or unnecessary. One of the worst slanders against the Roman Catholic Church, you'll hear people say, oh, well, the difference between Rome and Protestants is that Protestants believe in justification by faith, and the Catholics believe in justification by works, as if the Roman Church didn't believe in the necessity of faith. That is simply not true. It's a scandalous slander against the Roman Catholic Church. So in our next session, I'm going to talk some more about how this business of faith and works relate to our justification.
You're listening to Renewing Your Mind with Dr. R.C. Sproul. Stay with us because Dr. Sproul will be back in just a moment. Today's lesson is titled The Means of Salvation. It represents just one portion of the 15-part series titled Justification by Faith Alone. This study covers one of the most central doctrines of the Christian faith, one that each of us must understand. Renewing Your Mind is made possible by the generous gifts of listeners just like you. When you give a donation of any amount today, we'll say thanks by sending you the entire Justification by Faith Alone series on CD. Call us toll-free at 1-800-435-4343 or go to renewingyourmind.org. And when you contact us, ask how you can become a ministry partner as well. Now, here's Dr. Sproul again with today's Coram Deo thought.
One of the things that both Protestants and Catholics agree upon historically, that it is the work of Christ that is absolutely essential for our salvation. The ancient monk Pelagius argued that a person could be justified in the sight of God strictly on the basis of his own exercise of his will, of his own performance, of his own works, that a person could earn salvation without ever depending or relying upon grace. And Pelagius taught that heresy. He agreed that grace helps, it facilitates our redemption, but it's not absolutely necessary. Every time that heresy has appeared in history, the Roman Catholic Church has unambiguously declared it to be just that, a heresy, and has repudiated the idea that a human being, by his own efforts and by his own merit, without any grace, without any help from Jesus Christ, can redeem himself in the sight of God. And so that wasn't the issue in the 16th century. The basic issue is, how does the objective work of Christ become mine? How is the work that Christ performed, without which no one could be saved, how is that work appropriated to the individual believer? And the Catholic Church saw that it was appropriated fundamentally through the sacraments and through this cooperative venture that we're involved in, where the Reformers believed that it was appropriated simply and completely by faith alone.
Justification by faith alone. This doctrine was central to the Reformation, and it's central to this ministry. When you provide us with a financial gift, you're also helping your fellow listeners as they grow and mature in their faith. So again, we invite you to call with your donation. Our toll-free number again is 1-800-435-4343, and our web address is renewingyourmind.org. R.C., there are some people in our listening family that are looking for ways they can become more involved in Ligonier Ministries. They're just not sure how to take the first steps. Would you talk about that?
Oh, I'm happy to, Lee, and I have an answer for you. We are a ministry that is listener-supported, as you well know, and we're grateful to people for gifts, no matter how small or how large they may be. And increasingly, people are becoming ministry partners with us. We call the ministry partners our sustaining donors because they give monthly donations, and frankly, they're the backbone of this organization. These are the people that we depend on day in and day out, month in and month out, year in and year out, to help this ministry expand around the world. But it isn't just a one-way relationship. We're also committed to help people in their spiritual growth. As a ministry partner, you will receive a number of added benefits that will be targeted to help you grow spiritually. A monthly copy of Table Talk Magazine, a free book or resource of your choice each year, special invitations and discounts to conferences and events, and a lot more. When you pour your financial resources into us, we'll pour our theological resources into you. And not only to you, but to people around the world through this ministry. Lee, tell them how they can become a ministry partner today.
Simply by calling us at 1-800-435-4343. I'm Lee Webb. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Next time, Dr. Sproul continues this series with a lesson titled, By Christ Alone. That's next weekend on Renewing Your Mind.